In this episode, I visit with Joey Siever, one of the founders of Level Legal, an alternative legal service provider. We talk about that concept, compliance, in part one of a special two-part episode.
This is Bart Peterson, and you are listening to the FCPA Compliance Report on the Compliance Podcast Network.
The FCPA Compliance Report is a production of the Compliance Podcast Network. Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox back for another episode. And today I have with me Joey Siever. Joey has one of the most interesting legal-related businesses I've seen in some time. We're going to have a special bonus segment on the Bears winning the NCAA championship that I can't wait to get into. So we're going to have a lot of fun today, and we're going to learn a lot. So, Joey, first of all, with that incredibly long-winded introduction, welcome, and thank you so much for taking the time to visit with me today.
Thank you, Tom. Pleasure to be with you. Thank you for the invitation.
Could you tell us a little bit about your professional background, Joey?
Yep. I went to Baylor Law School. Graduated in 1990, practiced law for about 4 years, civil litigation work. Started practice in Waco and then moved to Tyler pretty shortly after I started practicing. And then several entrepreneurial ventures and a little public service. I served on the city council and then as mayor for the city of Tyler from 2002 to 2008. And then 12 years ago, started Level 2 Legal, now Level Legal, with a couple of partners, and I've been doing that ever since. So that's the short version.
So you are the first elected politician I have had the privilege to interview. So we're going to have to explore that a little bit.
No, it's not the last. Don't ask me about current politics. I've been out of it for a long time.
Well, really, what led you to want to become involved in public service? You mentioned the city council and then moving up to the mayor. What was that interest you've always had, or what led to that part of your career?
Yeah, in politics or public service, I was politically aware very early in my life for some reason. I remember my dad, this really dates me, but I remember my dad putting a Nixon sign in our front yard in 1972. I just always paid attention to politics and what was going on, both on the local level and, you know, national level and all that. And I've always been interested in serving, you know, doing what I can to serve. I did that in college and, you know, moved to Tyler and got involved in the community. And there was an opportunity for a city council seat. And somebody came and said, look, there's this open seat. I think you would be great to serve in this role. I bit off a little more than I could chew there because there was an opponent. There was somebody else running who really wanted the seat. So anyway, I ran. I won, served for 6 years there. And then we had term limits in Tyler. And then after my terms were up on the council, I ran for mayor and was elected to 3 terms there. I enjoy working with people to make things better and to serve. And it was a wonderful experience for me. It was really fantastic.
I grew up with kind of the same types of parents. My parents, I can remember we actually had precinct elections in our garage. Young kid. And one of my favorite phrases is politics is the art of the possible. So I really wanted to use that to maybe ask you some of the leadership lessons you learned as mayor and how you had to work with obviously a wide and diverse group of constituents. And how were you able to bring that collaboration together in that leadership position?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tom. And I have to tell you that my service as mayor, those 6 years were fantastic years. First of all, I've got to be honest and say we had a great economy. So, you know, we didn't have a recession during the time that I was mayor. You know, sales tax receipts weren't down or any of those kinds of things. I had the good fortune to have some good city managers that I worked with. I had the good fortune to work with great council members. And we functioned as a team. And, you know, In Texas, we don't have partisan municipal elections. You run, and you're and there may be a runoff and you win. They're not primary elections. Having said that, you know, I served with four Republicans and two Democrats with a council of six, and never one time did any partisan political issue come up or the kinds of things that seem to pollute politics today. And at the municipal level, you know, it's about your trash getting picked up and you having a good police force and the water runs and the toilet flushes and taking care of those kinds of local issues. What did I learn? I learned the power of teamwork, the power of our working together. I tried to kind of operate by consensus. Very rarely did we have contentious issues where the council was in disagreement or the council disagreed with the management, city management. And it was a delightful time. You learn how to work with various constituencies, right? It sounds, no pun intended, coming from Tyler, like a bed of roses. But it was a good time, but it's still challenging because everybody's got their own interests.
You may find it shocking, but there may not be people
they'd like to see done. They have their own constituencies who are demanding.
So could you explain why Tyler is the Rose Capital?
Work with each of those and then come up with the best result. I'm happy to. In the 1930s, 20s or 30s, should know my history better. There, first of all, our part of the state and the country is red clay, pine trees. The northeast part of the state is not like any other part of the state of Texas. It's quite green and, you know, rolling hills. And so that soil is particularly good for, you know, certain crops. And it's fantastic for peaches. And before oil was discovered here in the East Texas oil field, this was just an agrarian part of the state, a very poor part of the state. So there were lots of peaches and peach farms here, but the peach blight came sometime I won't get it exactly right, back in the 20s or 30s. And they had to convert to another crop. And so many of the farmers converted to roses. And we're talking about rose bushes, not long stem roses. But Tyler then became known as the Rose Capital. So we have a rose festival.
So let's turn to your current
company.
For
those who remember and followed.
And I wanted to ask you first, what led you to found the company?
And
really,
I
would say you have a very different approach than many legal service firms I come across. So if you could talk to us a little bit about what makes your approach so different.
Level League was founded in the depths of the Great Recession. Our first day was the day after Obama's inauguration in 2009. You'll remember that great financial collapse happened at the end of 2008. There was the change in administration. The stock market low was in March of 2009. So right in between those, during those dark days, we started Level 2 Legal at the time. Two of my business partners were working with one client in particular and doing document review for that client within a law firm. We had the idea to spin that function out of the law firm, thinking that there would be great opportunity in kind of an alternative legal provider market. Now, we didn't use that term at the time. that ALSP, Alternative Legal Service Provider term, came along later. But we believed at that time that while document review, particularly for litigation, for discovery in litigation, was the first of what would be some great opportunities to deliver legal services in a different way. So that's why we created the company to do that. And we started with one project and one client, hoping to get a second project and perhaps more clients. And it very quickly grew. And within a year, we were opening an office in the Dallas area so that we could recruit, you know, attorneys to work for us. Speak for a long time about that. What makes us different, I think, is our approach. We, you know, the founders of the firm, myself included, and those who began working in the firm early, have all practiced law. And we practice law in the litigation context. I personally tried cases at every level of the courts, from, you know, JP to federal court. And we understand the needs of lawyers as they are practicing. So we're able, from our very earliest days, to anticipate the needs that lawyers have and the entire process of litigation and where we fit in that process and why what we do is important. So that we're not, you know, we were not simply a, you know, data firm, a copy shop, a processing firm that decided we were going to add some legal services. We started with the legal services, understanding the entire context, and then working backwards. So I think the sense of service and customized or bespoke service, if you will, has been in our DNA since the very beginning. I think that's probably what sets us apart from, and look, there are many great competitors, many great providers. What, I'll put it this way, what customers tell us, clients tell us when they come to us, is that you're the reason, you know, the quotes are, you're the reason I can sleep at night. You know, I know that it's handled, I know you're handling it, I don't have to worry about it. I think that's what sets us apart.
So why is building long-term relationships so critical to the company's success?
We do a much better job once when we get to work long term with clients. Look, we know your acronyms, we know your custodians, we know your policies, we know your corporate structure. As we build a relationship and work together, we understand that much better, and we're able to do a much better job. We, you know, one of our employees put it very well. One of our leaders put it very well. You know, we're not really good one night stand people. We're in it for the long run, and we do a much better job when we can get to know you and get to know what's important to you, so that we can begin to anticipate what you need and deliver that value.
You've expanded far beyond document review, and I would say even litigation support. So I was wondering if you could describe generally some of the corporate or not perhaps non-litigation projects that you found to be a big success for you and your clients.
Well, this being the compliance podcast or topic, I think that's probably a good place to start. You know, we work with some you know, very large corporate clients in the compliance area, particularly those who are under consent decrees, perhaps in the antitrust area, and have worldwide obligations in that respect. And so for some clients, there is a proactive program to be sure that they are in compliance with the various consent decrees or other restrictions that they may have because of their market power. So that's something we do, very similar to a litigation context, but it's proactive to make sure that you're in compliance with the requirements that you have. Also in the investigation area, government investigation or internal investigation, perhaps there's some suspected fraud or other, other situations internally, we're able to jump in and help with that. And we have a team that's quite experienced at that. And then the last thing I'll say, which is something that we're just now beginning to work with clients on, and that is in the privacy area, where there are many states with many different regulations. And of course, the GDPR from Europe and the CCPA in California and, you know, a myriad of other acronyms. Compliance has become really challenging for organizations of all sizes, not just the largest companies. And so we're beginning to work with clients in that area to help them.
Let me pick up on that last point, because one of the biggest frustrations I hear from certainly corporate types, but also just others, business executives, is the lack of a national data privacy law, one standard across the country. And I've unfortunately said that I just can't see the last Congress or this Congress doing anything because of the kind of the situation we're in now. But that really leaves businesses with literally up to 50 different obligations. And then if you overlay GDPR with another set of obligations, how do you help? I guess first, do you have a perhaps more optimistic view that we could get a real national law pass and whatever that might be? How do you help clients deal with that issue today?
Well, today it's piece by piece, right? There are some very good tools that we use. OneTrust in particular is a company that has developed an amazing set of tools, and we're wrapping our services around those tools to help clients stay in compliance with the myriad of requirements that they have. On a national data, federal data privacy law, it's really quite interesting. In fact, I'm putting the finishing touches on an article that'll be published in the next month or so about this topic. First of all, the conclusion is, I agree with you. I think it's unlikely that there will be a comprehensive federal data privacy law passed soon. I think that's also unfortunate because, you know, we have some one of the things we do is have a series of dinners of general counsel around the country. We had unfortunately suspended that about a year ago. We'll pick them back up at the end of this year. But one of the most interesting was about a year and a half ago in San Francisco. We had a dozen general counsel around the table. You know, it was a great restaurant. And the topic is whatever they want to talk about professionally. And the topic of privacy and privacy regulation came up. Interestingly and uncharacteristically, we would hear there was general agreement that they would welcome additional regulation. They would welcome a unified privacy law. You think, well, that doesn't make sense. You want, you know, these are corporations, general counsel who are looking for more regulation. Their challenge, as you identified, is every state has something different. And if there were a federal law that we could count on that even preempted those state laws, then that would be much easier. Now, what are the chances of that happening? You know, I think if we got a federal law, it would probably be a baseline law with certain, you know, particular restrictions, particularly around consumer privacy and what can be done with consumer data. And then states could probably add on to that. The chances of that happening, you know, I don't think they're great. I do see there probably would be a way to thread the needle. I think you would have traditionally opposing political interests unified. You know, you could imagine that those on what we just call on the left, who are particularly interested in privacy, and those who might more traditionally represent corporate interests, who would be interested in, you know, some efficiency and predictability around the topic. You can imagine a world in which they might agree on a baseline bill that might unify some of it. I don't see that. That's just me talking. I don't see that happening. I mean, literally see it happening in Washington. But one could imagine that it could. But we'll see. There's been a bill filed. I don't know the particulars of it, but with so many other things on the plate right now in Washington, it's hard to see this rising to the top with the kind of political will that it would take to happen.
Joey, we're going to end this podcast at this point and have part two, where we will continue the conversation.
Yeah, I would love to. Thank you for the opportunity.
Part two will post on Wednesday, May 13. Please check it out. Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox again. I'd like to thank you for listening to this episode of the FCPA Compliance Report, a production of the Compliance Podcast Network. We have a great new show on the Compliance Podcast Network called Mo Forecast, which is a podcast of the law firm of Morrison & Forster, hosted by James Koukios. Check that out on the Compliance Podcast Network. Also, in the month of April on The Compliance Life, I'm featuring Jonathan Kellerman, partner at StoneTurn, had a fascinating career in healthcare compliance, culminating in the CCO chair at Allergan before he moved over to StoneTurn. So check out The Compliance Life on the Compliance Podcast Network. I hope you'll join me again next week for another episode of the award-winning FCPA Compliance Report.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.